Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and as you probably know by now, this is the show where we talk about exactly what that verse in Revelation 18:4 and so many other places, literally one way or another, Scripture suggests, and I will suggest that the time is now to, in fact, do that. Come out of her, be separate, touch not the unclean thing. Recognize that there are plagues clearly on the horizon, and that the only way not to participate with them is, well, the founders put it this way, to withdraw consent. Don't participate in the sin so that you don't partake of the plagues. When you see that the game is rigged, don't play. There are a whole lot of ways to put it, but ultimately, there is one main solution, and of course, that in turn literally depends on us being able to recognize who we serve and what the supreme law of the universe really is, who the Creator is, what our responsibilities are. All of these things fit together. And once we begin to kind of put the pieces together, then it's incumbent upon us to begin to take the next steps, and indeed to do that, to come out of her and be separate. Because as the founders put it, this is at least supposed to be a government that rests on the consent of the governed. If we consent to evil, why are we surprised that so many of the things that we see happening are happening? All right. Well, today what I want to do is talk about some other things that are, I think, ever so topical, given where we are and what's going on, and the fact that, we seem to be drawing closer, literally day by day, to war on so many levels, but particularly to what might be called civil war, to an intent, a design to divide neighbor against neighbor, a man's enemies to be within his own house, and so forth. All of these things, again, Scripture has suggested are coming, and the only question is when. If we look at the world, it's difficult not to argue that it's now. All right, well, one of the things that I want to spend some time talking about today are some of the elements of the question of how we got here, and what does it mean insofar as what we can do and what we need to come out of. So I want to begin with a question that I've asked a number of times in the past, and, well, how did we get here? But let me suggest an answer that I've also kind of tongue-in-cheek, even cynically used for any number of years. If you look at the world today, if you look at what's become of the Constitution, if you look at what's become of the rule of law, you can see that this is what happens when you give crooks, politicians, lawyers, well, okay, yes, I repeat myself, 200-plus years to undermine the written law. And how does it happen? Well, that's why this show has been going for so many years, because there are literally so many ways that it's been done. That's part of the reason why I suggest there's no single magic bullet, you know, to say the magic words, the chains drop off, and all of a sudden, yeah, you win the prize, you get to be a free person. No, we do in fact have a Redeemer, and that is the ultimate key. But as far as how the chains of this world have been applied and strengthened over the years, I can't help but harken back to a conversation I had with a fellow who is a famous Green Beret years ago. You may know the name Colonel Bull Greitz. They wrote the song about him, the Green Beret, long ago during the Vietnam War era. But in a conversation that we were having in a class that he was giving in the Front Range of Colorado, Bo said, I never send a team around to the front door, but what I don't send another team to the back door. In other words, when it comes to understanding how many things have been done to destroy the rule of law, to literally hamstring the Constitution, and to create a race of slaves, a nation of slaves out of what were once free men who fought and won a war for independence and built a nation on the concept that we have rights from God, that there is no other place where rights come from, and that the sole purpose of government is to secure these rights. So again, we've gotten here in so many ways. Lots of these we've talked about in past shows. De facto slavery via things like the 14th Amendment and its feudalism. Slavery literally by agreement. A bondage to dishonest weights and measures. The scripture warns us against that over and over again. The Constitution says nothing but gold or silver coin should be made a tender in payment of debts. There is no provision in there for a central bank, much less a public-private partnership. And yet, how did it happen? And of course, whether we know that or not, the answer is once we're here, it's clearly not a constitutional system that we have, money-wise. It's clearly not a biblical system, money-wise. As a matter of fact, it's called an abomination, and we're promised that those who participate with the abomination will suffer as a result. So no surprise here at all. So many ways, in other words, that the team has been sent around to cover all of the doors and make sure that even if people figure out one of the myriad ways in which the Constitution has been gang-raped and turned upside down and the rule of law has been destroyed and all of these things have been put in place, well, there'll be others. In fact, though, today I want to talk about some of the others because they are very, very topical right now. And let me begin with a piece by former federal judge Andrew P. Napolitano. He works with Fox News nowadays, writes a column. And this one I find interesting, and at the same time, I'll admit, it's downright deceptive. And I of late have wondered about the good judge Napolitano and exactly where he stands on so many things. But as we go through this, you'll see what I mean. It helps to illustrate a lot of the concepts that I want to explore. He talks about the distractions and the smoke screens first, so many of them. Let's skip over all of that stuff. But he does say there's a profound free speech issue that's been bubbling below the radar. Oh, really? Well, is he talking about the fact that there isn't free speech anymore? Because the public-private partners, Gulag and Apple and Twitter and Two Facebook and all of those have completely undermined the concept of free speech via their public-private partnerships with Big Brother? Not just in America, but Big Brother Communist China, in the case of Apple and Gulag, Russia, any number of other totalitarian regimes find it just great to be enter into making these deals with the devil. The socialist credit scores, all of those things are being put. No, that's not what the judge is talking about at all. He should be, but he's not. Instead, he's talking about a book by a pretty scummy fellow, evidently, Trump's former friend and colleague, as he puts it, Cliff Sims. The book is called Team of Vipers, probably written by a guy who knows what it's like to be a viper. He was a former White House communications aide, says Napolitano, and Trump campaign advisor. The White House basically says, no, he was more like a gopher. But in any case, there is litigation now in progress about whether he, as Napolitano puts it, can freely publish his book, which he's already done, and freely profit from it. Yes, it's nasty. I'm not going to worry about the contents of the book and whether it's true or not. You can read it and draw your own conclusions. Says Napolitano, this is an unhappy tale. Not when it comes to the accuracy or fairness in reporting, but with regard to the doctrine of fair comment and the natural and constitutional right to freedom of speech. Okay, that sounds good, right? Well, he says, here is the backstory. I'll say here is at least a teeny bit of the backstory. I'm going to suggest there's more, and we'll talk about it as I go through this. When Sims began his time as an official of the Trump campaign, says Judge Napolitano, he signed a non-disclosure agreement. This has been called an NDA. And folks, they are extremely common. As a matter of fact, in all of my work as an engineer, you pretty much can't get a job in technology without one. They specify different things, but basically it's, hey, in the course of your employment, you may be exposed to trade secrets, things that are key to this business, technologies and the like, and business plans. And if you expose these things to our competitors, that incurs a liability. Says Napolitano, when Sims began, he signed one of those NDAs, and they bar the revelation of information gathered during one's employment. They were nearly universal, he says, in the Trump campaign. Full stop. Come on. You know better than that, Judge. They are universal, period. Especially when you're dealing with anything associated with Big Brother or Big Brother's public-private partners. to make it sound like it's just Trump that did this and not Obama and Bush and Clinton before him. They even had omerta, some would suggest. That's the code of silence that means, hey, there's worse things that can happen to you than just being sued. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. All right, he goes into some detail. The NDA provided that if there was a dispute between this man and the Trump campaign over the meaning or whether the campaign violated, it would be resolved via arbitration, which would be secret. Yeah, not in front of a judge and a jury. Of course not. That's the point. The NDA further provided for liquidated damage, an agreed-upon amount of money, if the arbitrators found that he violated the NDA. Okay, so far so good. None of this should be a surprise to anybody that's worked in industry or in government. Again, it's a practically universal practice. Now, here is where I think I'm going to take some real issues with what Napolitano has to say. What about the right to freedom of speech and the right to a fair trial? The theory of the NDA is that a signer has knowingly waived those rights in return for employment, the kind that's contemplated by the NDA itself. This is called a quid pro quo. You get hired at a job you want, you get the pay, the perks, and you agree to keep silent about the secrets you learned. And if there's a dispute, well, it'll be resolved in arbitration in secret, because that's what the NDA specifies. And in this case, the specification is that if he violated the agreement, this author owes Trump and the campaign $10 million. Now, here's where the problem comes to a head. Listen to this. I'm going to read the paragraph as Napolitano wrote it. That's at least the theory of how these NDAs are supposed to work. But the courts do not favor these agreements because often they stifle free speech. And often it's speech in which there is a material and serious public interest. Yet, since they are between private parties, NDAs are enforceable. Full stop. There is one right, pretty much just only one right in the Constitution that still exists. I've talked about this a number of times. Article 1, Section 10. No state shall pass any law impairing the obligation of contracts. Folks, there is nothing anymore that you can't be prohibited by Big Brother from doing. And I have suggested that the only right that a formerly free person still has that's actually enumerated in the Constitution is this right to contract. And as I have pointed out many times, you can trade your birthright for a cup of pottage. Scripture makes the same point, story of Jacob and Esau. You can, in fact, sell your soul to the devil. That's an old and popular theme in literature, from Damn Yankees on back. Yeah, contracts are enforceable, and they don't have to be public. So to say that there's something unusual here is, is disingenuous. And furthermore, and worse, and the judge doesn't mention it, people have given away literally every right. Do you have a right to be free of illegal search and seizure? No, not if you enter into a contract and think you can fly on a public conveyance like an airplane or get on a train or a bus. Big Brother can grope you, search you, take your stuff. How about, as I've mentioned before, if you go to a ballpark, see a football game or a baseball game, read the fine print on the ticket. We can search you. It's part of the contract. How about your right to keep and bear arms? Well, if you get a license, if you ask for permission, you don't have any rights. And so forth and so on. Freedom of speech, you name it. These rights have all been done away with by many ways, but one of them, chief among them, is making the deal with the devil, with Big Brother, whether people know it or not. And the constant principle is called adherent contracts. Again, that's the joke, the fine print, the stuff that nobody ever reads. Page 47B, subparagraph 103, subpart 2, subsection 1, where it says, hey, you know, if you sign this deal, we own you. That kind of thing. The fine print, the devil is in the details. You've heard it. Now, back to Napolitano, and this is where I think this piece gets so disingenuous. He says that in this case, the speech is about Trump, who later became president. So even after Sims' book was published and the folks are still in the West Wing, they read what he wrote. They didn't like it. They want to take that $10 million. Here is the problem, he says, for Trump. I'm going to read this carefully and suggest pay attention to this, because this goes to the heart of one of the myriad ways that the rights of what were once a free people have been literally gang-raped, destroyed, deep-sixed, flushed. Here's the problem, he says, for Trump. The campaign his campaign when he was running is not subject to the First Amendment, right? This is the private part of the public-private partnership. And, of course, the public-private partnership is the insidious, nasty, fascist thing that combines public and private when it suits Big Brother. That's why it is so insidious. That's why I think this is so disingenuous. He's ignoring the fact that in a fascist state, there's no difference between the public and the private. Let me get back to it. Here's the problem for Trump. The campaign is not subject to the First Amendment, but the White House clearly is. Whoa. Who are we kidding? The Obama White House was subject to the First Amendment? Why, people could come forward and talk about his lack of a birth certificate, or his past, or his, let's just say sexual proclivities, right, Bathhouse Barry? Hell no, folks. There was no transparency. Give me a break. It's just this White House that seems to be, not any that preceded it. Back to Napolitano's disingenuity. Even if Sims did sign an NDA at the White House, the First Amendment bars the government from enforcing it. And there are several federal statutes to protect whistleblowers, no matter what they agreed not to say at the outset of their work. Ah, here you go. Unless, of course, it's classified material being protected, which in every case it always is, because everything is classified. What they have for lunch is classified. This is asinine stuff. All right? You can't read this without thinking, who is this guy kidding? What is he covering up? Every single NDA with every single intelligence agency, military agency, always says anything we say is classified. Hey, it was the same way when I worked at IBM and Storage Tech and other big corporations in America. We call it IBM Confidential. It's confidential. You can't talk about it. Big Brother says everything is confidential. So the point is, when it's classified material being protected is kind of silly because it's all classified. So what he's doing here is trying to make a cause, a distinction, without a difference. In the West Wing, he says Sims worked for the federal government, not Donald Trump personally, and not the campaign. So can the government punish speech of someone who agreed to remain silent? In a word, no. It cannot deter speech. It cannot chill speech. Don't kid yourself, folks. It can, it does, it has. And the only one that isn't allowed to do that seems to be this president. Because all the other presidents have got away with it. Now, let me just suggest, wait a minute, there is one more thing going on. Remember not long ago we had an FBI raid against a whistleblower? They took all of his stuff. Remember how the FBI essentially has said, hey, we're going to send a real message to people like Roger Stone. We can and will destroy you. They sent more people on the SWAT team to get him than they did the so-called terrorist Osama bin Laden, even though that guy had probably been dead for years. This is a whole bunch of stuff. And let's not forget, as we've seen with the Clinton dead list and with so many people, from Michael Hastings to any number of others that seem to have been offed. Maybe they jumped out of buildings. Maybe they had heart attacks. Maybe they just, decided that they wanted to sleep with the fishies. Who knows? But there is a swamp solution to the problem of people that don't abide by their NDAs. And maybe the reason why Trump hasn't been as successful as those before him is because he doesn't use this one. The swamp solution is to silence them by any means necessary. Back to Napolitano. Chilling takes place, he says, when government behavior is so oppressive that the potential speaker is afraid to speak about what he knows. And you don't think that that happens not only daily, but minute by minute? Yeah, it can and it does. This is disingenuous, nasty stuff. Again, the problem here is that NDAs are ubiquitous with Big Brother, especially with the so-called intel agencies. And coincidentally, those just happen to be the agencies that are looking to commit treason, sedition, undermine an elected president, and destroy him by any means necessary. Now, I'm going to spend the rest of the show today talking about some other related issues. Now, you'll see the connection here in just a minute, because there is a big question also about this guy, the occupant of the White House. I won't say the president, because remember when Imperial Penn stroke of the pen, law of the land, really was the law of the land. And what we've seen with this president is he can sign all kinds of things, and a third-rate two-bit judge in the Ninth Circus or someplace you never heard of will say, oh, no, he can't do that. Why? Because some little guy that's sitting with a black robe somewhere in Lower Sobokan says that he can't do that. Why are some presidents more equal than others? Why do some imperial pens work better than others? There does seem to be a message here. Why are some emergencies more important than others? Where I'm going to go next has to do with, a thesis that I first saw years ago from a fellow that I had the privilege to know and to interview and talk with on occasion, Dr. Eugene Schroeder, who lived here in Colorado. He was a veterinarian and an activist for the farming community. Wrote several books, most famous among them, the book Constitution, Fact or Fiction, back in 1995. And essentially, his thesis, and again, I suggest, before I go into this, that it is a partial answer, not the whole answer, but it's a very illustrative answer today. In other words, there are a lot of ways that the Constitution has been undermined, and he outlines several of them in the book Constitution, Fact or Fiction, including what he calls the war and emergency powers issue. And basically it boils down to, hey, if Big Brother declares an emergency, well, then they could pretty well toss the Constitution in the ash heap and not worry about anything else. And how they get there is really kind of interesting, and that's the subject of a number of his books. But essentially, it goes like this, and I'm going to look at some of the preface to Constitution, Fact or Fiction, and another set of papers that he and a group of people wrote and called War and Emergency Powers, a special report on the national emergency in the United States of America. Notice that there's no S on that, although we have dozens, literally dozens upon dozens of them by now. Today, the United States has the largest, most powerful government in the history of humankind, a government that is, by any measure, far more controlling, taxing, demanding, and, yeah, I'll say it, downright evil than anything that the founding fathers and their generation fought and died and pledged their lives and their fortunes and their sacred honors to free us from. In his book, Constitution, Fact or Fiction, as a matter of fact, in the other books that I'm looking at here, the people that surrounded Gene Schroeder and that sat on a committee with him that looked into this, and then again, he wrote several of these books, quote from Senate Document 43, 73rd Congress, first session. This is all the way back in 1933. And see if what the president said with his State of the Union address having to do with the United States never being a socialist nation rings true, or if maybe the truth is that for 85 years or more we've been de facto socialist anyway. Again, this is from the Senate Document 43, and Schroeder puts all of these in the appendix of his books. The ownership of all property is in the state, and so-called individual ownership is only by virtue of government, i.e. law, amounting to mere user. And that use must be in accordance with law and subordinate to the necessities of the state. Unquote. Achtung! Does that sound like a slightly different ideology than the concept of life, liberty, and property? Yes, it was based on the idea of, oh, there's an emergency. In the case of the federal emergency that the evil FDR and his cohorts foisted into place, it was all about the Great Depression, which perhaps never ended because the emergency never ended, and it's still going on today. What we're going to do is we're going to pick it up there, talk about some of the issues around this emergency, subsequent emergencies, and kind of interesting, isn't it, how there are so many emergencies they're really hard to keep track of. Most Americans don't have a clue, but this guy, the president that's in there now, can't even declare one for an actual invasion.
There's no point to life. it's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my...
Welcome back, folks, to the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and today we're talking about a number of things that, well, if nothing else, they should be really illustrative about where we are and what's going on in this increasing battle. And there are several elements to it. I mentioned up front that when you give crooks, politicians, and lawyers 200-plus years to undermine the written law, you should expect it. They get really clever, and they have found a number of ways to do it. And I don't even have time to outline all of them, but that's what we've talked about for year after year on this show, many of the ways. Today I'm focusing on a couple of them. The public-private partnership and the idea of NDAs and the smokescreen that was out there, courtesy of an article from Judge Andrew P. Napolitano, that I really kind of found offensive because he ignored the bigger issue of the fact that a fascist state does this kind of thing. And along the same lines, we have the problem with the emergency. Now, a lot of folks have been saying, gee, why doesn't President Trump just do what president after president after president after president have done for a whole lot of far lesser reasons, you name it, all kinds of basically almost silly things by comparison to an actual invasion, and declare an emergency, build his wall, and stop the invasion. We got tens of thousands of people headed north. And as the first few thousand are successful, there have been hundreds of thousands already successful, the invasion will continue and accelerate. That's part of the plan, obviously. So why not an emergency? Again, there have been emergencies declared for you name it. Dating back to this first one that I was talking about when we went to the break, and probably the emergency de tutte emergencies. If you want to look for a place where the emergency card was played, and it's existed ever since then, you go back to March the 9th, 1933. And it goes like this. Basically, it was, it was insidiously, downright satanically clever what they did, but it goes like this. And to begin his story, both in his book Constitution, Fact or Fiction, and in this War and Emergency Powers document that I'm looking at, he quotes Senate Report 93-549, dated 1973, which lays it right out. Says this, since March the 9th, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency, period. Exclamation point. And that emergency, folks, has continued without interruption since March of 1933. Basically, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt declared that there was a state of emergency equivalent to war. Now, remember, back in the days, the United States used to declare war against foreign powers. Instead, what Roosevelt did at the start of his administration, 1933, was invoke the Trading with the Enemies Act that had been passed decades earlier. It was dated 1917, and says Schroeder, he did so at the suggestion of the unconstitutional Federal Reserve Bank. And this is the part where it gets really insidious, and I'll read through a little bit of this to make the critical point that Dr. Gene Schroeder makes. On October the 6th of 1917, at the beginning of America's involvement in the First World War, Congress passed this thing called the Trading with the Enemy Act, empowering the government to take over all kinds of, any and all commercial, monetary, or business transactions conducted by enemies or allies of the enemies, of the United States. And the act defined the term enemy, and by the way, back then at least, it excluded specifically citizens of these United States. You ready? Enter some clever lawyers. All you have to do later on, and we've seen it with gun laws and you name it, we'll just redefine. We'll redefine person. We'll redefine property. We'll redefine anything we want to. Because it all depends on what the meaning of the word is. You get the act passed, it's unconstitutional to begin with, and maybe it doesn't apply to certain persons, later it will. Aren't we clever? Citizens of the United States were not enemies of their country in 1917, and the transactions conducted by citizens were not considered to be enemy transactions. But, if you look again at Section 2 of the Act of March the 9th, 1933, they changed the wording, excluding wholly the phrase that excluded wholly domestic transactions has been removed from the amended version and replaced by the words, quote, by any person within the United States or any place subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So basically, what he says, and there's page after page of this to make the point, we're gonna do this rapidly today. The people of the United States were then made subject to the power of the Trading with the Enemies Act from 1917 as amended. Basically, says Dr. Schroeder, we the people became the same as the enemy, and guess what? Ever since, we've been treated no differently. There was no longer any distinction. And there is a whole lot more. There are court decisions that he describes in here concerning cases from back in the 1920s and 30s. And essentially what was described was this is where enemies were defined to have no personal rights at law in court. Case after case after case make that point. And then once you go ahead and just redefine the words so that the people of the United States are in the same group with other enemies of the United States, well, a couple things fall into place. One, you can see why it is that they don't want the slaves from to be able to have weapons or firearms or to be able to defend themselves. Enemies, you know, slaves, we don't want any of those evil people to be able to have that kind of stuff. How about can we search them? Sure. Can we stop them from traveling? Well, of course, they're enemies, aren't they? Isn't it funny then that the only people who really aren't enemies are the ones that actually commit outright treason via email and other kinds of things and then get to run for president? Dr. Schroeder notes that if you go into a courtroom, try this. No, don't try it, folks. With your Constitution and the common law in your hand, what does the judge tell you? He basically, if he says anything other than, bailiff hang him, is that you have no persona standi in judicio, no personal standing at law. Don't bother bringing that Constitution into this court. I've talked about that a number of times because they are no longer constitutional courts, but tribunals operating under a totally different jurisdiction. He quotes another section, 93.549, to say, under this procedure, we retain government by law, special temporary law, perhaps, but law nonetheless. The public may know the extent and the limitations of the powers that can be asserted, and the persons affected may be informed by the statute of their rights and their duties. Or, of course, as we've seen of late, a lot, they may not. The evil President Roosevelt even said the following, quote, we will never go back to the old order, which now kind of begins to take on a whole different scope and understanding. There is a lot to this. Within the books that Dr. Schroeder has penned, he puts copies of documents. I'm looking at a couple. Exhibit 1, dated November 19, 1973. Emergency Power Statutes. Provisions of federal law now in effect delegating to the executive extraordinary authority in time of national emergency. It's called a report of the Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency United States Senate. Well, the national emergency wasn't terminated. There are others here, one dated Washington, July 24, 1973, hearings before the Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency of the United States Senate, 93rd Congress, first session. Again, the national emergency wasn't terminated, and we've got more and more emergencies. They passed additional statutes later, adding to. But isn't it funny, again, and this is part of the reason why I make this point, that well, we have all kinds of limitations, not of the powers of the central government, but of the rights, privileges, immunities, and property ownership of what were once called Americans, United States citizens. There's a term of art for you that might just now have a whole new meaning as well. Things to be careful of. No wonder when a president threatens to expose that, there are real problems at hand. I'm not honestly sure if Trump even has a clue about the depth of the perfidy that has gone on. I don't know that any of us can take a look and really see the big picture, because there are so many pieces of the pervasive evil that wraps all this thing up. That's part of the reason, again, why I say there is no single magic bullet, no magic words you can say that literally just mean the chains drop off and your God-given constitutional rights are restored. Now, we do, in fact, know that the one that we serve is more powerful than the prince of this world. And if we know who we serve, and if we know which kingdom we seek to be told, well done, good and faithful servant, that's a whole different understanding. It doesn't mean, however, that there aren't going to be all kinds of evil people who, usually in ignorance, because again, none of them probably really understand the depths of the perfidy here either, are simply going to say, well, look, slaves don't have rights. We don't know why it is you don't have a right to keep and bear arms. But on the other hand, if you have something that we declare you shouldn't have, from a bump stock to a dreaded assault rifle, and we can always change the definition of that now, can't we? To various ammunition, and pretty soon it'll be any ammunition, you name it. Well, we'll come and we'll kill you and we'll take your stuff. So again, isn't the irony here incredible? That's the thing, that if people don't understand the whole picture, they can at least look at the pieces of it and go, you know, why is it that we have dozens of national emergencies, and yet this president, unlike stroke of the pen law of the land, cannot declare a national emergency when we have literally thousands of invaders streaming across an unprotected southern border and doing all kinds of things, including bringing in terrorists, MS-13, ISIS, you name it. Again, we are at the point where literally the enemy has been turned upside down, just like good is called evil and vice versa. The people of the United States are the enemies. Hillary Clinton revealingly referred to them, us, as deplorables. They're deplorable because they think they still have God-given rights protected by that Constitution thing. When it comes to presidents, I guess it's true what Orwell wrote there as well. Some animals are more equal than others. All right, I want to pause for a second and just kind of make sure we tie up some of the loose ends here with respect to the evil that's been done. If you haven't seen some of these books, I would certainly encourage you. Dr. Gene Schroeder's, again, Constitution, Fact or Fiction is one of them. It's the story he writes in the preface of The Nation's Descent, from a constitutional republic through a constitutional dictatorship to what we now have, and this was written a long time ago, 20-plus years ago even, an unconstitutional dictatorship. I want to mention one other thing, because frequently I will refer to the fact that what we were supposed to have had, and this again, most Americans don't have a clue about. They haven't taught civics, for the most part, for decades in the schools, in the public indoctrination centers either. People will tell you we have a democracy. Well, one of my taglines, as long as I've been doing this show, is I'll give you $200. Used to be $100, but I've doubled it because inflation, you know. Never have to pay it anyway because it's just not in there. Anyway, give you $200 if you can find the word democracy in any form, in any part of speech, in any of the original law of the United States, either the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, or the Bill of Rights. Democratic, democracy, none of those words are in there. Now, they are, in fact, and I've quoted it at length, in the Anti-Federalist Papers and the Federalist Papers, because the founders knew that democracy was the devil's own government. They said so. Such democracies have ever been short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths, said Madison, and so forth. A republic, madam, is what Ben Franklin famously told the woman who asked him, what form of government have you given us, if you can keep it. Well, as it turned out, we haven't. And at least since March the 9th of 1933, there's not even been a pretense of it. Now, after the Trading with the Enemies Act, remember that was 1917, there were still military manuals, and maybe you've heard this, it's certainly a well-known thing among the patriot and the constitutionalist and even evangelical understanding community. Goes like this. I'm quoting from the 1928 American Military Training Manual. A democracy, Okay, this is the definition, that soldiers who went off to fight once were taught. Democracy, a government of the masses, authority derived through mass meeting or other form of direct expression, results in mobocracy. Attitudes towards property is communistic, negating property rights. Attitude towards law is that the will of the majority shall regulate, whether it be based upon deliberation or governed by passion, prejudice, and impulse without restraint or regard to consequences. Result? Demagogism, license, agitation, discontent, anarchy. Doesn't sound like something you'd want, does it? Well, at least once upon a time, soldiers who would, in perhaps a lot of cases, give their lives for the Republic, if you can keep it, knew that what they were not fighting for crying out loud, was a democracy. By the way, the word Republic is defined in the American Military Training Manual as well. Authority is derived through the election of public officials best fitted to represent them. Attitude toward property is respect for laws and individual rights and a sensible economic procedure. Pause. Can you compare that to what's been going on today? The nutcases that aren't representatives of anything except maybe George Soros or the worst elements of the most debased satanic cult you can imagine? They don't even put their hand on a Bible anymore. They don't believe that we hold these truths to be self-evident. There is no hint of the rule of law. So yeah, attitude towards property of a republic is respect for laws and individual rights, sensible economic procedure. Attitude toward law is the administration of justice in accord with fixed principles and established evidence, with a strict regard to consequences. A greater number of citizens and extent of territory may be brought within its compass. Avoids the extreme, says the military training manual, of either tyranny or mobocracy. Results in statesmanship, liberty, reason, justice, contentment, and progress. Hey, no wonder Franklin said this is a good form of government if you can keep it. And here we are. We're so many ways it's been undermined. I have talked about a number of things over the last few weeks with respect to what is going on and how much we can see. On the news today and over the last couple of days, I did an interview with some women, some mothers from California, who were essentially disgusted with just one small element. It's a big one, no doubt, of what they were seeing, and that is the attempt to turn to groom, I think is the popular sexual terminology, to groom children to be the prey of pedophiles. This is what California is openly doing with their so-called curriculum. Sex education. No, it's not. It's education in perversion. It literally boils down to another thing I have suggested for a long time. Take Scripture, line by line, precept by precept, see what it is that the God of the Bible says you should do, turn it upside down and say, well, we're going to forbid that, prohibit that. If he says do it, we're going to say, hell no, you can't do it. Not in this formerly constitutional republic, now mobocracy. We're going to mandate that you do the opposite of it. If the Bible says, on the other hand, that it's an abomination, that it brings a death penalty, great. We'll not only mandate it, we'll subsidize it, we will glorify it, and we'll tell you that if you don't like it, not only are you not going to keep your mouth shut, if you so much as speak up against it or don't toe the line, will destroy your business, whether you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, or a wedding photographer. And they're teaching this crap now in the California schools. And essentially, I, in the interview, talked with the mothers, and their goal, of course, is to let most Californians that have their children in the public schools, the public cesspools, simply be aware of what's being taught. They're being lied to. They got all kinds of clever ways of doing it. We've talked about those for literally years at this point. We're not buying the curriculum. No, it's being given to us. We have multiple curriculums, so if you ask about one of them, they'll say, well, it's another one. This is they got all kinds of ways of lying through their teeth and essentially not telling a specific lie, but just kind of covering it up. It's the very same thing that we see on all of these fronts with the attempt to undermine the rule of law via front doors, back doors, side doors, windows, and you name it. We'll destroy it via all those techniques we've talked about. De facto slavery, the 14th Amendment feudalism, getting people to make the deal with the devil by agreement, to sign up for dishonest weights and measures. Remember, currency is not the same as money. And now, today, we've been talking about this idea of war and emergency powers. Declare a state of emergency equivalent to war. All the way back in 1933, March the 9th, a number of acts were passed that literally changed the meaning of words in old acts, like the Trading with the Enemies Act, made people subject to the jurisdiction of something that, well, once they weren't enemies of the state, but now they are. That was the way, by the way, that Roosevelt was able to steal the American people's gold. Most folks are probably now aware of that, even though, well, most folks that would listen here, I will say, are aware of that, even though they weren't. How is it that a free person could have their gold stolen from them? There was a constitutional provision. That's part of the reason why they stole not the wedding rings, but the coinage that was minted because of what's called fungibility. At least at the time, they paid attention, lip service, if nothing else, to this idea of takings being prohibited. Nor shall public property be taken for private property be taken for public use without just compensation. And that would have required a lawsuit. But they simply said, oh, well, we're just giving you 20 paper bucks for your $20 in real gold. Here, you ought to like it. We'll even give you a few pennies extra. Aren't we nice? And here we are decades later where Americans have been dumbed down to the point where they don't recognize that their children are being taught perversion in the public cesspools. They have not been taught what real law is for decades. They have been told that if the Bible says something, well, that's an old done away with book. Don't pay any attention to it. No wonder that what we see now are people being sworn. Give me a break. They're not sworn to anything, folks. They put their hand on a Koran in at least two cases, and that essentially gave them the right to say, hey, we're lying through our teeth because we serve Allah, ha, 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 and we watch Sharia law, and this Constitution thing we intend to undermine. How far gone are we? In anywhere and in any way you look, the rule of law has been literally flushed down the toilet. So to answer the question again, in a slightly different way that I've asked and answered so many times, what happened to the Constitution? Why are virtually none of those rights that were once protected there, not granted by, but protected there, now so much done away with? First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, you name it. If it was protected by the Constitution, slaves in the year 2019 don't have it. They can even think that they elect a president with one of the few remaining things that they thought was a right. Well, it's a privilege exercised if you properly register with the Almighty State and declare yourself to be one of those enemies of the state by registering to vote. Isn't this clever? They got us six ways to Sunday. Well, then you think you get to elect a president, and then you find out that if the election doesn't come out the way it was supposed to be rigged, well, he doesn't have any real power. His pen, I guess, doesn't have any ink in it. Anybody else can declare an emergency, including a two-bit judge, but not the guy sitting in the Oval Office. Why? Because there's a real invasion going on. Other people that they want brought in who are no more Americans than so many that are sitting in the halls of Congress and acting in a seditious manner to undermine a Constitution that they put their hands on, well, some book anyway, and lied about. All right, back to the big question. The point of all of this discussion is to simply understand that in so many ways things have been undermined to the point where, can we even see the entire picture? Well, it's difficult. So what that means, what do we need to understand as we look? Well, the rule of law essentially, for all practical purposes, is dead, with the exception of the fact that he who is within us is greater than he who is within the world. We need to understand who we serve. We need to understand that the prince of this world is not on our team. But what's more important is who is. His name is Yahuwah. He wrote the book for us. He changes not. His word is true. And even if all these other things are lies and we come to realize it, it really does matter who we serve. And that's why we need to come out, withdraw consent even, and be separate, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.